Hi there, folks. Welcome to the program. This is Stinchfield, the podcast. So there is a lot of talk about the bird flu out there. And everyone I've been talking to seems to think, at least right now, it does not pose a real threat or any grave danger to humans. But the problem gets back to this gain-of-function research. This idea that, can it jump from mammal to human and then ultimately human to human? And does this become a problem? Does the disease intensify? Does it get worse? And there's some evidence that that could happen. But I want to separate the fear-mongering from the truth, what's really at play, how big a role is Big Pharma and the, what would you call it, the Big Pharma industrial complex of selling test kits and vaccines, how much of that is playing into this? We've got an election coming up. Is there control that they are after here? You've got the WHO, the World Health Organization, weighing in on this. We know they're basically an arm of the vaccine manufacturers. So let's talk about all of this. And then, oh, by the way, monkeypox. That doesn't sound great, right? NIH, National Institutes of Health, withholding information from Congress about gain-of-function research on monkeypox. What is it with this gain-of-function research, and why are these government scientists so focused on it? Again, we'll talk about all of that with our friends over at The Wellness Company. This podcast is sponsored by The Wellness Company. To protect yourself from all these things I'm talking about, folks, you got to get with The Wellness Company. Get one of their medical emergency kits with the antivirals, antiparasitics that you need, antibiotics as well, that you need to keep yourself safe. Super easy, twc.health/grant. Use that promo code GRANT for 10% off. Don't wait. You're going to want to have these medications on hand and not need it, then need it and not have it. All right. So this prescription medication kit is basically now with my ammunition, my water, my food. It is a measure of precaution that I will always be prepared. And that's what I try to do for me and my family. twc.health/grant. Use that promo code GRANT. All right. With that, let's get the show started.
Uncensored and unapologetic. This is Stinchfield. Here's your host, Grant Stinchfield.
All right, folks. Thank you so much. My guest today, Dr. Harvey Risch with The Wellness Company. Doc, it's great to have you back on.
It's fun to be with you, too. Thanks
all
very
right.
much.
So here we go now. We've got the bird flu. I saw Dr. McCullough, a colleague of yours, good friend as well, puts out a piece on his Substack that basically was asked the question, is this the disease X? We know that the government medical higher-ups over at NIH, CDC, have been talking about this disease X, the next pandemic that they're preparing for. Is that the bird flu?
No, it's propaganda X, not disease X. I think that what we're seeing is more of the same fear-mongering that we've had for the last 4 years. If there is a bird flu epidemic, it will occur not because it evolved to be epidemic in humans, but because it was made to be epidemic in humans. And the fact that we have a bioweapons industry that is going whole hog, so to speak, on developing toxic, virulent, infectious agents that could create pandemics, you know, that it's like if somebody messes around with dynamite and blows up his neighbor's house, they can't claim, oh, it was an accident. Sorry, it was an accident. They're responsible. Well, our bioweapons industry is responsible for creating the SARS-CoV-2 that created the COVID pandemic. And if they keep working with gain-of-function experiments to make a human infectious version of the bird flu, H5N1, then they're responsible and they need to be held to account. We cannot have a society that mass produces toxic agents for the purpose of selling antidotes.
All right, so let me get this straight. Bird flu is not a risk to humans unless humans get involved and weaponize this. And what happens then? Because I know humans have been infected with the bird flu now. It seems like they really aren't affected all that much by it. If humans get involved to weaponize the bird flu, do they make it more dangerous or more powerful of a virus?
Well, there's two components of this. One is its infectiousness, the fact that it can colonize a new host, human beings, and transmit from human to human. And the second is its degree of virulence. Now, the bird flu that's gotten into humans so far from animals has not been virulent. It's been a mild infection causing pink eye, probably because the people got it on their hands from handling animals and rubbed their eyes or something like that. And one case of lung or respiratory infection that was also not severe, mild. And that is where it is at the moment. It depends on what the gain of function research does. Just targeting human cells that makes it infectious in humans depends on which cells it targets, because all of our cells have receptors on the outside of the cells. And if they make the outside of the spike protein or its equivalent in the bird flu able to latch onto human cells that way and get into human cells, it depends on which cells they get into. If they get into the lung, then that would be a more serious issue. If they get into the upper respiratory tract, the nose and throat and so on, that's probably less of an issue. So this all depends on what the scientists contrive. If they make it so that not only does it get into the lungs, but also creates an overreaction of the immune system, which SARS-CoV-2 did, then it will be potentially damaging and life-threatening. But those are separate axes of research. You can work on virulence separately, generally, from human infectiousness. There is some overlap, right, but they can be considered separate.
So we know for a fact that there are labs across the world working on H5N1 gain-of-function research. I can't imagine every one of those labs coordinates with each other. And maybe some do, maybe some don't. And if they don't coordinate with each other, and maybe I'm going off on a tangent here, but what happens if you've got one lab that's somehow released one version of their gain of function, another lab releasing another lab, and you get this concoction now floating around the world?
It's possible, but pretty unlikely, that you can get people infected with both at the same time and they can intermingle, but that's a second order of problem that's pretty unlikely.
So my
issue with this is if you have multiple labs doing this and something gets out, each lab will say, not me, but point to another one. But you'll see that the lab that destroys its stocks is the one that's guilty.
Oh, interesting.
The one that destroys its sequences is guilty, okay? Because they know it was theirs, because you can tell, because each lab is doing different kinds of research, and so each one produces a unique virus, and so you can trace it back to the lab. And therefore, the one that's really guilty will have to destroy all of the information about what it did.
And if I'm not mistaken, this is what happened in Wuhan, correct?
Yes.
They destroyed everything.
They hit it, destroyed it, yes.
Yeah, unbelievable. Okay, so let me play a clip from you from Dr. Robert Redfield. He was on with my buddy. He wasn't. I'm going to play a different clip. Who was on? Dr. McCullough was on with my buddy John Solomon. But Dr. Redfield was on News Nation talking about the bird flu. I'm going to play this clip. I have my skepticism about Dr. Redfield. I think he's doing the Joe Biden trick of trying to play both sides now after his involvement with the pandemic. But let's listen to him. He's the former CDC director.
I'm obviously most worried about bird flu. Mm-hmm. Right now, it takes 5 amino acid change for it to be effectively infecting humans. That's a pretty heavy species barrier. But this virus is already now in 26 mammal species, as you saw most recently, cattle. But in the laboratory, I could make it highly infectious for humans in months, because it's been published the 5 amino acids that I need to change. And so I don't think that research should be done. That's the real threat. That's the real biosecurity threat, that these university labs are doing these bio experiments that are intentionally modifying viruses. And bird flu, I think, is going to be the cause of the great pandemic, where they are teaching these viruses how to be more infectious for humans.
All right, let's just take his line. Bird flu is going to be cause of the great pandemic. I guess, did we not just have the great pandemic? What is he saying here?
Well, we did just have the great pandemic. And he's saying two things, the first half of which I agree with, that there's a limited finite number of amino acids. That's in the product of the genetics. So a limited number of genetic changes that would likely make this human-to-human transmissible. However, that won't happen unless humans do it. It will not evolve naturally to do that within the next 1,000 years, most likely. So if that happens, one lab will be responsible. The first one that does that and it gets out will be responsible for it. He's saying that so many scientists are doing this that it's not being controlled, that it's ultimately going to get out. I think that we need much stronger penalties of crimes against humanity for scientists working with dangerous things that explode in their faces. Mm-hmm. This is something that we as a society cannot tolerate. And if our Congress will not block this kind of research, they need to be removed immediately. This is the emergency here, is that we're doing this research without controls, and it's actually impossible to keep completely controlled.
So is there someone calling the shots with all these? I mean, you know, we talk about the globalists, we talk about the World Health Organization and Klaus Schwab. And then you add in Barack Obama and George Soros. And everybody calls us conspiracy theorists for raising all of these questions. But to me, if it really is about control, power, and money, whether it's selling the test kits and vaccines and controlling us before an election so we can't go vote for Donald Trump, and all these, somebody's got to be calling the shots. Do you believe that to be true?
Yes, but it's not exactly what you think. That what's calling the shots is a diffuse Hydra-like network that involves all of the people that you and I think of as the ones in power who've come out both publicly and privately. The National Security Council, Fauci, Collins, the heads of the CEOs of the pharma companies, NIH, other NIH people, and so on. These are all people who are driving these kinds of decisions, and they all understand from each other what's going on, and they're all aligned. But that doesn't mean they're sitting in a back room, you know, cooking up their cabal ideas. It means that these ideas are floating around in the things that they think about and understand. And that's how this is organized, in my opinion. The essay about this, N.S. Lyons wrote a Substack last August about, it has China in the title, but it really is talking about managerialism in our society.
All right, interesting. So I guess the end result is everybody that thinks like this knows how the other one's thinking, and they all just kind of do their part.
That's right. This is the banality of evil. That's
all right. And I look at this in politics. You know, you're supposed to have a super PAC. They're not supposed to talk to the campaign, but you put somebody in charge of the super PAC that knows exactly what the campaign wants. They don't have to talk. It all gets done.
That's right. Same mechanism.
Okay. Let me play a clip from Tedros, because he laid out who or what mammals were being infected by the bird flu. Some of them surprised me here. Let me play this for you.
Over the past few weeks, there have been several reports of mammals, including minks, otters, foxes, and sea lions, having been infected with H5N1 avian influenza. H5N1 has spread widely in wild birds and poultry for 25 years, but the recent spillover to mammals needs to be monitored closely.
All right, so minks and fox and sea lions? How are sea lions becoming infected by this?
Oh, probably from mallard ducks who land on the backs of sea lions or something out, you know, wherever they come to the surface. I think that this is, so I don't know what Tedros is promoting by saying that, except trying to stir up more fear. Propaganda, that this is something that has been out there in the world and it's going to pass. And all of, you know, what is he going to cull all the sea lions? Is he going to cull all the mallard ducks? Honestly, most of these animals get this and it's mild and they get over it and they get immunity. And that will, you know, after a decade or more of all of these animals, mammals getting it, they will all become more or less immune, and that it will end in that reservoir as well. It'll be low level endemic the way it has been, and that won't affect people unless the people have intimate contact with these animals, like dairy workers or so on. You know, there's a large number of dairy workers in the world, and the fact that only two of them have gotten this H5N1 out of all of that intimate contact means that it's not very transmissible.
Makes sense. All right, you asked, What is he pushing here? How about I let him say what he's pushing? All right, Doc, check this out.
Or wild animals interact. WHO is also continuing to engage with manufacturers to make sure that, if needed, supplies of vaccines and antivirals would be available for global use.
Well, there you have.
Which failed antivirals is he talking about?
Yeah, which ones is he talking about, right? And so and of course vaccines that aren't produced yet, but Lord knows we'll get them, and the government will buy them all and push them out, and it'll be another $1 billion scheme, I take it.
Well, the interesting thing about this is that there's a paper from about 10 years ago by Yan and colleagues looking at chloroquine treating different strains of respiratory influenza. And what they found is, while it didn't work well against the H1 and H3 strains, it did work well against H5 strains. And so we believe that hydroxychloroquine will be very likely to be an effective and safe treatment drug for early treatment for if this actually does come to existence in humans.
All right. So this is important. You know, I talk about the wellness company and their kits that they have and the antivirals, antiparasitics. There is a kit that can help with the bird flu. Is that right? Not to mention just all the other things you may come across. I diagnosed myself with strep throat. I had all the spots on the back of my throat. It was pretty easy. Do you know I took the amoxicillin from the wellness kit that I had, and literally the next day my throat was already feeling better. And on my way, and I think that was the speed of delivery. But my question is about the wellness kits. Are we okay with the bird flu? Is there anything in there that can help us with that?
Well, the hydroxychloroquine is likely to be helpful. We don't know yet about Tamiflu. Tamiflu has not been very effective in respiratory influenza so far. There's evidence pro and con, and it's a bit controversial. Some people feel that it's too has too many adverse effects to be useful. Other people and think that it doesn't work well enough. Other people think that if you get it on the first day of symptoms, you use it on the first day of symptoms, it might have a chance to work. Honestly, I think that because there's so much contradictory evidence, it's very hard to know. But just to be on the safe side, we've included it in the kits, but we're still monitoring how this is going to go. So between that, vitamin D, you know, all the things that we said about COVID still applies. Everybody should have vitamin D in their normal daily diets, and vitamin C if they like, and exercise, sunlight, and the usual things.
Yeah, and the usual things, and we should be safe. And I want to remind everybody where you can get all of these things, by the way. The wellness company, twc.health/grant. Use the promo code GRANT for 10% off. And I'll tell you, folks, I've had numerous times had to replenish the wellness kit because I've already used it. I've used the ivermectin to help me with COVID. I've used ivermectin to help me with a cough that would not go away. And Dr. McCullough helped me with that. And we got a little plan. I used the wellness kit to get me with this everlasting cough. And then, as I said just the other day, the amoxicillin. There are so many things that can come up in life that you're going to have these medications on hand right away. Can't be beat, folks. I'm telling you, make sure you put that in your, if you got a little emergency drawer, an emergency stash, food, water, ammunition, and a kit from the wellness company, twc.health/grant. Use the promo code GRANT for 10% off. All right, so we were talking about gain of function research, Doc, and then I see an article about monkeypox. Apparently, NIAID, National Institutes for Health, National Institutes for Allergy. What is it? What is NIAID?
Infectious disease.
There you go.
Allergies and infectious disease.
Thank you. Are refusing to give up information about monkeypox gain of function research to Congress that's investigating this now. Have you heard anything on this front?
No, because monkeypox is not that active an area of interest for me or at the moment in general. There's some research, I gather. I would say two things. One is that if these are NIH-funded grants, that the NIH reporter website, R-E-P-O-R-T-E-R, that website can be searched for grants on monkeypox. You can search by year, by investigator, by words, by titles. It's a very general search apparatus at the website. And so if there are funded monkeypox Granted, monkeypox is not the only word I would use. You could also use other terms to describe the technical names of the virus and so on, that you'll see if there are an NIH-funded grants. Now, if the Department of Defense is funding this stuff, then that'll be harder to track down. But in any event, there should be some information out there. The second thing is, when Congress, in closed session, has the right to obtain this information in its supervisory capacity for NIH, and then NIH refuses, then you have to ratchet up the pressure on NIH. That's the way our government works. It's hardball, and that's what you have to do.
They should hold these people in contempt. This is from the outlet uncoverdc.com. And this is reports coming out of Congress. NIH, Health and Human Services, and NIAID allegedly repeatedly lied to Congress. The agencies allegedly lied repeatedly to the committee, stating the most dangerous MPXV experiments had not been proposed or planned. However, internal documents proved the experiment was formally proposed and received approval before the NIH Institutional Biosafety Committee back in 2015. This was 7 years before the committee first asked about the experiment. These were experiments on monkeypox, gain of function, and you know, working with the genes and all of that kind of thing. So another example of them getting caught basically lying to Congress.
So we need to know whether that work transpired or not, you know, and was this new experiments at the time of the gain of function pause under the Obama administration or not? And what were the policies of that?
What is it with gain of function? Why are they so hell bent on this? Wouldn't it just be common sense to say, you know what, we've really got to put a moratorium on this?
Well, there's two things also. I think that there's a silly idea that other people, other countries are doing it, therefore we have to do it to compete, to threaten them back if they threaten us. Of course, I've said many times that a bioweapon is not a weapon of first choice when you're attacked by a bioweapon. There's all sorts of ways of retaliation, economic, you know, normal military, nuclear, depends on how serious the attack is. Bioweapons are only cause damage, and there's torrential blowback. It comes back to hit you eventually, no matter what you do, because these things circulate the globe. So it's not a proper way to think that you have to make these bioweapons to protect yourself. I think that this has been written about, that these scientists think they're going for glory. They think that making one of these things will propel them into career publicity that makes them a big authority in the world of importance. At the level of, if you designed and built a nuclear bomb and you detonated it in a test location and you show that you did it, well, you would have all of that glory of having made a nuclear bomb. Okay, so that's what they're doing, I think, that they are in it for their careers, their own personal satisfaction, and they have no conscience whatsoever as to the horrendous damage that these things could and will likely cause when they escape from labs.
You know, I think you raised a great point about the response to a bioweapon, because my argument would have too been, all right, well, if China's making them, then we got to make sure we make them. But I'm not sure, as you say, that you want to respond with a bioweapon. All right, so say we release something in China, and next thing you know, it's only going to take a few months and it's back over the United States eating us alive. And it is interesting, because this shows you the difference between China and the United States. I'm still a believer, I don't know where you fall on this, but I believe the Wuhan lab, the lab leak, was at the very least allowed to spread intentionally. Whether it leaked out intentionally or not, I don't know. I know it came from the lab, but it was allowed to spread intentionally. That means China was willing to use it. Now, I believe it was allowed to spread intentionally because we were putting tariffs. President Trump was finally taking the fight economically to China, and I think China was pissed. And they said, here, try this out on your economy. That's my belief, Doc.
Well, you know, it's really hard to predict what's going to happen to your own country when you release this stuff in your own country. After all, it came out in China first, and they had no way of predicting how much damage it would cause to the Chinese economy and how well their lockdowns and other forms of initial management would help or hinder, you know, or damage the the population and the economics and so on. So you don't take such drastic moves on purpose with the inability to predict the consequences.
Yeah.
On the other hand, once it came out, I think they were very reticent to admit that, to reveal that, that they were coping with its growth, population growth, at a time that they were denying that this was happening. Yeah. So they still hosted the World Military Games in Wuhan in November. And I have colleagues who happened to be giving speeches at scientific meetings in Wuhan in that time period and came back sick, you know, which was most likely COVID.
Well, if you remember, they locked down travel inside China. You're not allowed to travel inside China, but they kept international travel open. Maybe, maybe I'm getting off track, but maybe the international military games was by design. What a great way to bring in groups from all over the world, let them get infected and spread it out.
That's entirely possible. You know, there's motivation is very hard to understand unless somebody tells you what their motivation is. And
yep.
Then you should probably believe them.
And certainly China does not care about its own people. I mean, they really don't. I think Xi Jinping could care less about the people there. So when you don't have a care about that, then it opens up a whole new set of options for you if you really don't care if your own people are dying. Here's another story for you. Attorney General Chris Kobach, who's really a great attorney general in Kansas. This guy's been taking the fight to everybody that needs the fight taken to them. Well, he sues Pfizer, insisting that Pfizer misled the public that it had a safe and effective COVID-19 vaccine. That, according to the state's Consumer Protection Act, he seeks civil monetary penalties, damages, and injunctive relief for misleading, deceptive statements made in marketing the COVID-19 vaccine. What do you make of that lawsuit?
Well, I think that he's got a legal shot at it. I'm not that optimistic that he can surmount the PREP Act for most of the things in those charges. However, there is one thing that is also in that case, which is he's asserting that the companies represented that the vaccines stopped virus transmission. And that was pretty quickly proven not to be true. By mid-2021, 6 to 7 months, there was already evidence appearing that that was not true. By the end of the first year, there was major evidence that that was not true. And at that time frame, the vaccine manufacturers were still promoting the fact that the vaccine supposedly prevented transmission. Now, you have to realize one other thing, which is that the EUA approvals for these vaccines did not allow the vaccines to be used to prevent transmission. The EUAs say only to prevent infection, and that preventing infection means the person taking the vaccine. Because they were never tested for transmission, the FDA could never have approved them because they were never given any evidence on transmission. They were only given evidence on the people who actually took the vaccines and whether they got infected or not. So the EUA approval is very specific. It goes back to law from the FDA law from 1938 saying that approved medications can only be marketed for the purposes that they're approved to be marketed. And so this was approved to be marketed for the prevention of infection, not for the prevention of transmission. So all of that is is illegal or contrary to the law on all the FDA principles.
Well, they thought they'd get away with it because they literally had government higher-ups spewing that it would stop transmission. I mean, we were literally told that over and over again by the likes of Dr. Fauci and others. And so I'm sure the pharmaceutical companies like Pfizer thought they could totally get away with that because it was in the bag with the higher ups that were overseeing them and the regulators. But thankfully,
well, interestingly, I think it was August 6th of 2021, Rochelle Walensky, the head of the CDC, said one thing the vaccines can't do anymore is stop transmission. So she made a public statement about that and nobody paid attention. They were still mandating vaccines well after that.
Well, thankfully, people are paying attention now, Dr. Risch, to people like you and Dr. McCullough and Dr. Thorpe and so many great doctors with the wellness company. We always love doing these podcasts with you. I find them informative for myself. I hope everybody else does out there as well. But it's always a pleasure having you on, and I appreciate your insight into all of this.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Absolutely, and great to have you on. All right, folks, listen, I want to remind you again, how important it is to take the precautions necessary to make sure you and your family are safe when it comes to early delivery of these antibiotics, antivirals, antiparasitics for what you may need. The Wellness Company kits come with an easy guide to help you figure out what the medication should be used for, how to take them effectively. As I mentioned, thankfully, I had the old basic amoxicillin on hand and cut my downtime, I'm sure, literally by days, if not a week or so, and already feeling much better. So that, of course, thanks to the Wellness Company. TWC.health/grant. Use the promo code GRANT. Ivermectin in these kits. Again, another drug that's turning out to be a miracle drug that's been around for so long that is now helping so many people. The Wellness Company can get you that ivermectin in these kits. TWC.health/grant. Use the promo code GRANT. That's going to do it for us. I will see you tonight on the Real America's Voice show. Stinchfield's Army Rolls. Thanks for watching, everybody.